And now Chris Johnston, our NHL insider, joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays on the program. And lots happening in the hockey world over the last couple of hours, or actually even going back to yesterday. Plenty of hockey news to touch on with CJ. Chris, let's start with Vancouver, which when we last spoke seemed to be locked in, or as close to locked in as you could get, as one of the NHL's hub cities. But in the last 48 hours, things have changed. What can you tell us as to where we are today in that regard?
Well, it doesn't appear as though Vancouver is going to be a hub. And you know, I don't want to declare anything too firm because, you know, as we've seen, things do tend to change. It would seem pretty quickly with what's gone on in the hub cities. But, you know, at this point, the government of British Columbia and the NHL, you know, don't see eye to eye on exactly how things should work in the event that there's a positive test. You know, BC has been one of the provinces. There's been the province that's had the most success at, you know, limiting the spread of coronavirus. There are very few cases in their city and in their province at this point in time. And I think, understandably, to a degree, they want to keep it that way. And you know, there's only so far they're willing to extend, you know, their policies to in order to, you know, have the NHL teams come and play there. And at least at this point in time, you know, that seems to be a deal breaker. Again, I can't say 100% because things have kind of swerved and moved throughout this process. But, you know, at this point, you know, 2 days ago, certainly when we spoke, Pat, you know, it looked like things were on track very much for them to be confirmed as one of the hubs, and all that momentum has since been lost.
So where does that leave Edmonton and Toronto?
Well, it's a little different for those two cities because the provincial governments in both Alberta and Ontario, I think, have shown more of a willingness to, you know, to see eye to eye with the NHL on what would happen in the event of positive tests within the bubble. And so, you know, I would say that those two cities now have new life. You know, both of them within the last 4 or 5 days have updated their bid package and addressed some concerns with some tweaks. In the case of Toronto, they actually moved the entire place within the city where the hub was going to be and came up with an alternative plan to what they'd initially offered. And okay. I think it was viewed quite favorably by the NHL. They're basically going to use some exhibition grounds here. That's about, I'd say, 1.5-2 kilometers from where Scotiabank Arena is. But it's a huge space that includes the arena where the Marlies typically play. And the Toronto Raptors have a large new practice facility on that spot, in addition to a you know, fairly high-end hotel. And so between, you know, some of the amenities you could have by opening the Raptors practice facility, that hotel space, and then, you know, even having a practice rink all within what could be a completely contained bubble that none of the public would be able to get anywhere near. You know, it does seem as though that there's some hope now for that bit, but, you know, I can't label one or the other a front runner now. You know, it's hard for me to have a total grasp on where this is headed, but, you know, I do think if Vancouver doesn't find a way to change the course of the conversation around their bid, that it will go to one of Toronto or Edmonton.
Okay. And that's interesting. Do we have, like, it seemed like there was this momentum to have an announcement this week, and then obviously there's been a snag and things have had to go in a slightly different direction. So what do you understand in terms of timelines and when we might actually hear about things officially?
Well, there is no more time, basically. I mean, at the absolute latest, early next week, this would have to be confirmed. You know, I would expect if they can, they'd like to get it done sooner. I mean, you know, even tomorrow night, we've got an NHL draft lottery show, full hour window there. You know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly will be on set at the NHL Network Studios in Secaucus, New Jersey. I'm sure they're going to be talking to the cameras, saying something, giving some kind of update on where things are at or what they're thinking for the return to play. And so, you know, I do think that there's going to be some opportunities here to announce the cities if they can get the agreements done and if they can settle once and for all on where they're going. But, you know, at this point in time, at this hour, you know, they haven't got there. I do think at one point there was some thought about even trying to announce it by today. You know, that was earlier in the week. But, you know, it does seem that that's going to go by the wayside here, and they'll try to zoom in on where they're going to pick. I mean, I think, you know, the one thing that we don't have full sight into is there's so many of the small details matter when it gets down to the end. And so, you know, my understanding, there's been a lot of phone calls between the people organizing each city and the NHL, addressing concerns, seeing, you know, getting clarification on certain aspects of the bid. And so, you know, all the those details have to be taken care of before anything can be finalized. I mean, it's all well and good for us to opine this city's good because it has a nice hotel and there's not that much COVID. But, you know, there's a lot more that goes into whether this thing happens. I think that's what happened in Vancouver, frankly. I mean, it ticked every box and still does, except for the fact that, you know, essentially my understanding is that, you know, in the event that, say, a player on the Flames, you know, got a positive test for COVID while in the bubble in Vancouver, you know, the BC government would want anyone who came in contact with them to have to sit out a period of time, not just the individual that produced that positive test as part of the contract tracing. And, you know, obviously that would either delay or completely disrupt the schedule the NHL would like to work on. I think, you know, the way the league envisions this happening is that if, you know, there's a, you know, one positive test on a team, that individual would be removed for the point in time until they produce negative tests, but that the games would continue going on without them. And so, you know, that's a fairly sizable hurdle, but it is, you know, really one small detail in what was a pretty large bid and comprehensive bid. So, you know, I don't think it can be rushed, but, you know, certainly we're down to the final days for all of this return to play package, I think, to be wrapped up and for something for the sides to vote on.
It's funny you mentioned that, CJ, because, you know, here we are, it's June
25th.
So when you think about that, because we haven't had hockey since March, it doesn't feel like July is less than a week away. Like, July is Wednesday, and you're like, oh, that means July 10th is like 2.5 weeks away. If they want to get training camp going and underway as planned by July 10th, like, they really don't have much runway left. We've been saying they've got runway for so long that it's time to take off, isn't it?
It is, and they also don't have runway on the back end. I mean, I think the league is kind of locked into the idea of when the quote-unquote new offseason would have to be and all those types of things. And, well, you know, there's a little wiggle room. I do think there's been some, at least, contemplation that maybe July 10th for the start of camp becomes July 13th or 14th. You know, I think, you know, we might see that date shifted slightly, and I mean very slightly. And as a result, everything behind it would go back a couple days. But, you know, it's not as though, without completely reimagining all the work that's been laid, that we're going to see the start of the season delayed 3 or 4 weeks from what's expected now. I just don't think that's possible. I mean, maybe if they absolutely have to, there's a way to do it. But, you know, really, I think we're in the window now to see some action. I mean, there's some good indications here, too. You know, I've heard, especially here in the last day or so, some very positive thoughts on both sides of the table about the direction of the collective bargaining talks. You know, there is an expectation that there'll be something, you know, the framework, not the full CBA, but there'll be some kind of extension that should be finalized, I think, by early next week, and something for players and owners both to review and vote on. You know, I do think a lot of the protocols are in place. It's a matter of finalizing these subsidies. You know, I don't know that they're all that far off of producing that document, but, you know, every day matters at this stage. And, you know, as of last Friday, the general managers were told that July 10th is still the target. You know, I think the NHL would like to keep to that, but, you know, there is a scenario here where maybe an extra couple of days are needed and the start of camp is pushed back ever so slightly.
Okay. With Chris Johnston, our NHL insider, lots of different ways to go. But you kind of brought up the CBA. So let's go in that direction first. Interesting tweet from Artemi Panarin today of the New York Rangers, essentially talking about escrow and how there needs to be an agreement in place about escrow if the players are going to come back and resume this season. What did you make of Artemi Panarin's comments today?
Well, the timing of it, I will admit, is a little perplexing to me because, you know, my understanding is the escrow issue has been dealt with in terms of some kind of informal agreement reached as part of the CBA talks. I mean, essentially, what they're going to do to simplify this is they're going to fix said escrow for next season and the year after that. And, you know, any overruns, because, you know, in the case, essentially, they're going to limit player losses off their salaries for next year and the next year and the next year. And you know, if the owners end up, you know, on the hook for more than 50%, I think that those will be, you know, made up down the line somehow. And that's sort of a complicated way of putting it. But, you know, my understanding essentially is that next year players already kind of know, assuming that they ratify the CBA and that the owners do the same, that, you know, the escrow is going to be set at 20%. Now, I can understand why that's a big deal for someone like Artemi Panarin. He's due to make $13 million next year. So 20% means he's paying $2.6 million back into the pot that he's never going to see again. And that's before taxes and agents' fees and everything else that you know, comes out of his expenses. So it's not an insignificant amount of money, but, you know, I don't know that, I'm not sure that there's any way that that's going to change at this point. I mean, again, my understanding is that's more or less agreed upon. And I think it's been kind of agreed upon as a structural thing for quite some time in the CBA talks. I will tell you what's interesting, and I don't know where it's going to end up, is that I know there's been some discussion about potentially allowing players to defer salary as part of this agreement. Again, I can't say for sure whether this will end up in the CBA, but I think it's been discussed. And the way to look at that is really a way to appease some superstars because, you know, for the most part, the big name players that have signed contracts in the last couple of years have all gotten massively front-loaded deals, whether it's guys like Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Panarin. You know, a lot of these players are due more money up front. And the problem for them is that next year is going to be the year that you pay the highest escrow of your entire career. And so if there's a way to push back some of that money, the idea would be that you're going to be paying less escrow in future years. So maybe that's what Panarin's pointing at. You know, I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, as I say, these things can always blow up, and historically they usually do. But, you know, my best intel on this has been that there's some real positive momentum right now to wrapping up the framework of the CBA, something like a memorandum of understanding that the sides will be able to vote on here in the next week or so.
CJ, you have covered lockouts before, and you have like, for instance, the last NHL lockout, you were one of the main breaking story hubs during that whole thing. Give us the history of NHL escrow, where it started, what it was designed to do, why it exists, and why the players hate it so much.
Well, I think the players hate it because it's money taken off their checks. And you know, I'm not going to belittle all players, but I don't know that all the players understand how it works. And so, you know, maybe some of these guys are young or it's never been explained to them. They've never thought about it. But if they sign a contract that says $5 million, I mean, it's not truly $5 million they're getting. It's $5 million less whatever the escrow ends up being for that season. And so the reason escrow exists is because salaries are given out in advance, but we don't know how much the league brings in that year until at the end of the season. And so, you know, because the owners and the players have agreed to split the total revenue in half, you know, it's possible that the players get paid more during the year and then have to pay some back to even the scales. And that's essentially what escrow is. It's taken out of the checks ongoing and kept in a pool. And then at the end of the season, you know, sometimes say they take 15% and it ends up being 13% and players get 2% of their salaries back in the future. But, you know, it's a practical function. If you're going to have a fixed system where, you know, you guarantee that owners get 50% and players get 50%, you don't know what the total revenue is going to be until you get to the end. And so there's no sort of clean way to operate that kind of system. And as a result, escrow's in there as a protection to make sure that there's a way to balance it. I think why players hate it, and I don't blame them. They look at their checks, and you know, these guys, for the most part, I think are probably in every case are in the top tax bracket. So depending where they live, they're seeing 50 or 52% taken off their checks for various taxes, and then they see another 15%, or in the case of next season, it sounds like 20% taken off. And you know, all of a sudden, your $13 million salary, if you're Artemi Panarin, you know, it might be $4 or $5 million in terms of what you actually get. Now, I'm sure the rest of us could gladly live on that. But, you know, it's not as much wealth, I guess, as you might think these players are able to accumulate if you just call up their cap friendly page and look at what they're earning. And so I think it's a bit of a sore point for guys, you know, also in the NBA, and it's a different economic system slightly, but in the NBA, the escrow is capped. And so it's supposed to be an even split of revenues, but the players, I believe, only can pay up to 10% escrow. So if it ends up 12%, you know, they end up 2% on the better of the ledger. So, you know, this is always going to be a bit of a sore point for guys, but you know, I don't see a solution absent changing the entire system. And given that the league sacrificed the 04-05 season in its entirety and the Stanley Cup to get this system, I can't imagine what it would take to see them change the system. So, you know, there's probably some small things that can be done to maybe lessen, to make it a little bit more fair or make the players a little more comfortable with it. And I assume that that's part of what we're going to see in the CBA extension, but there's certainly no obvious solution beyond abolishing a fixed salary cap to eliminating entirely.
That's the best explanation of escrow I've ever heard. Appreciate that very much, because as much as I like to think I've got a decent grasp of the CBA and all that goes into it, it can still be very confusing sometimes. Chris Johnston's with us, our NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays on the program. Okay, back to more fun stuff. And you talked about tomorrow. I'm like, what is tomorrow going to look like for us on the outside? Because this is the first time since the NHL did their big thing about their plan to return to play, and that's about a month ago now. This is the first time the NHL has had an actual event that they can put on live television and produce as their own thing and their own entity. What does tomorrow's draft lottery look like? How much of a spectacle is it? How big a deal do they make it? And what else on top of the lottery balls are we going to see?
Well, it's going to be socially distanced. So, you know, normally in this case, you'd have a representative of all the teams in the studio. And you know, we've all seen that when the cards get flipped around. You know, that's not going to be part of it. You know, those guys will be patched in from their team offices or their home office, wherever each of them are. You know, as I said, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly from the NHL will be in studio, and Gary Bettman will oversee the actual drawing of the balls along with someone from Ernst & Young to verify that it's done correctly and fairly. You know, I think it is significant because there haven't been many opportunities where the league's produced live new programming where they can try to make a bit of a splash. And you know, I do know that the commissioner plans to make some remarks. I'm sure part of what he says is still TBD based on what can be wrapped up in time and, you know, what can be decided. But certainly I would think that he's going to want to offer a little bit more than has been said already by someone in his office about the status of the return to play and his optimism for this happening and the work that's been done. You know, and then beyond that, for a few teams, and notably the Ottawa Senators, who have, you know, two of the balls in the lottery because they own San Jose's pick in addition to their own. You know, it's a big night in terms of creating some excitement potentially for some of those fan bases, you know, be it a Detroit, which had a historically awful year this year, a rebuild year where, you know, that was all designed around getting a top pick and an impact player. As I mentioned, you got Ottawa, you've got the other two California teams in LA and Anaheim that are there in that mix. You've also got something unusual because of the way they're doing it. You know, the eight play-in series losers also technically have a ball in that lottery, and you know, any one of them could in theory, you know, win the right either to the first, second, or third overall pick. In the event that happens, there'll be a second lottery further down the line to determine, you know, who gets that pick based on what happens in the play-in series. So, you know, it's going to be different, but I think that there should be some degree of anticipation for it for hockey fans, especially those that are hoping to see the league return. And it's kind of funny timing, as it turns out, that, you know, tomorrow night usually would be the first round of the traditional NHL draft in Montreal as it was originally scheduled. So, you know, it was going to be a big day on the calendar, just ended up a little different than we imagined because of 2020.
Are any chance that we get scheduled or anything like that, or is that still too premature?
I'd love to tell you. You know, I don't have a guess. You know, I do think that the schedule is laid out. I just don't know if they can announce that at this point until, you know, the players have had a chance to vote on the return to play protocol. Might be a little premature just in case something, you know, there's some kind of hitch here at the end. But, you know, I do think that there's a chance to, you know, whether it's hub cities or, you know, maybe in some kind of other rabbit up the sleeve. I just would expect there'll be some kind of announcement made or something given from the league, you know, with this opportunity. As I say, it's an hour show and it's a pretty quick lottery. So, you know, they're going to have some kind of content on there, and, you know, I'll certainly be watching closely.
Yeah, no, me too. I'm looking forward to it. And the last point, I guess, that I would ask you about is you talked about the significance for some of these teams. Just a little bit more on the significance specifically for the Ottawa Senators. I mean, that is a group of fans that want so badly to love their team, but with some of what has gone on with owner Eugene Melnyk and some of the, you know, rows he's found himself in and some of the controversies he's found himself in, plus the Erik Karlsson trade and just the way things have gone on the ice since they made it to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. It's been tough sledding for a Sens fan. How big a deal is tomorrow for that organization?
It's not a stretch to say it could be a completely transformative night. I mean, the odds aren't particularly high, but they could get the first and second overall pick. and, you know, or first and third or second and fourth. You know, the absolute worst they end up with is a fifth and sixth overall pick, which, you know, would be a disappointment in the moment if that's what happens tomorrow night. But I think when you step back and look at it, it's still a pretty good outcome. And so, you know, I think better days are ahead for the Sens. You know, it's not to say they're out of the woods organizationally. You know, we still, I think, should have some question marks about the way the team's being run, the tremendous turnover. You know, they've had a number of presidents even in the last year. There's just not a lot of stability there. But if we're just speaking about the hockey product, I mean, you've got already Brady Tkachuk and Thomas Chabot in the system. You know, you have a player like Josh Norris, who won the American Hockey League Rookie of the Year this year. He was one of the pieces they actually got for Erik Karlsson from San Jose. And then they also got the San Jose pick that's going to, you know, potentially be the number one overall pick tomorrow. So, you know, as heartbreaking as that trade was for the Senators, I think that you can really start to turn the page on it if you get, you know, one of the top pick or two as a result of what happened in that deal. And so, you know, it's such a big night. You know, I would feel bad for Sens fans. You know, my brother-in-law is a Sens season ticket holder, so I got a little sympathy for him because I talked to him about the team, and I know what it's been like to be a fan there. And so, you know, that'll be a nerve-wracking night for that organization because they do need something good to happen, and something very good could happen. I think Alexis Lafreniere would be, you know, a huge piece for them to land at this point in their development as an organization. But, you know, either way, you know, I think they're well set up for this draft. And, you know, as long as they maybe find some organizational stability, that I'm pretty confident saying better days are ahead for them and fairly soon.
Good stuff, CJ. Appreciate it as always. Outstanding reporting as always. We will talk to you again next week. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
All right, Pat. Thanks, bud.